Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrn Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
What does writer and philosopher George Santayana's perceptive statement, "Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it," have to do with the telephone game and problem companion animal behaviors? Let's begin with the telephone game. The telephone game has had many reincarnations over the years. However, the basic premise remains the same. The game teaches players how quickly information can become distorted when passed from person to person. When this occurs, the true message also is forgotten as the new message replaces it. A common low-tech version used by teachers and parents to teach this valuable lesson to little kids involved nothing more than a line of kids placed several feet apart. The first child whispers a message to the second. The second then whispers it to the third. On down the line until it reaches the last child, who then repeats it out loud. More often than not, this results in lots of laughter because the first and the last messages are so different. Adults also enjoy playing the game, but unfortunately, and like some kids, some adults forget its powerful message in their daily lives. Instead, they assume that what they ultimately heard was the same message the original source communicated. The telephone game evolved with technology, with face-to-face communication sometimes being replaced by an array of ever-faster electronic gadgets. Their creators often referred to them collectively as information-sharing devices, but it soon became clear that these devices could share misinformation to more people faster, too. Today, people think of this phenomenon as it plays out in social media, news reporting, and politics. But its effects also may arise when animals have, or some people even think certain animals have, problem behaviors, and especially aggression. This occurs because often what's animal aggression and what isn't is in the eyes of the beholder. Consider the case of the green Chihuahua Sparkle. Sparkle delights in sneaking up on his people and their friends, softly batting them with a front paw, then streaking behind the nearest barrier to observe the results. Sparkle has never scratched or otherwise hurt anyone during this game. The Greens and some of their friends love the self-taught canine game and think it's one of the little dog's most endearing traits. They can tell from his body language that he enjoys the game as much as they do. However, chronic worrier Margie Blue doesn't see it that way when her sister, a good friend of the Greens, describes the dog's behavior to her. "Mark my words, that dog is going to hurt someone someday," Margie tells her friend Joe Brown. Joe, who fears all dogs and especially little ones who he refers to as yappy rugrats, tells Sally Black that the Greens' dog bit someone. Joe doesn't deliberately distort the original message to make trouble for a dog and people he's never met. He does it because his deep-seated fear-based emotions regarding all dogs, and especially little ones, prime him to do so. When Sally repeats Joe's remarks to a coworker who has three small children, she adds that she once got bitten by a neighbor's Chihuahua when she was a child, and the bite became infected. Over time, the Green's playful dog, who never leaves his secured yard, becomes transformed into a canine menace who routinely roams the neighborhood, randomly attacking defenseless children of all ages and biting them so viciously several have required hospitalization. In populated areas where residents have the time and desire to engage in such problem pet behavior, telephone games, informal groups may then arise that support one message over another. These messages typically are polar opposites. In my experience, these incidents also may involve dogs or cats belonging to breeds about which those involved have strong emotional feelings. While sometimes these real or imagined problem animals may truly belong to the designated breeds, other times they may not. In our example, the groups consist of the pro-sparkles and the anti-sparkles. The pro-sparkles love all little dogs. When they approach the Green secured yard and notice Sparkle out alone, they burble and coo at him and try to tempt him to approach them. When the anti-sparkles encounter the dog under similar circumstances, they make nasty comments or kick the fence or make threatening gestures at Sparkles and otherwise communicate how much they fear and dislike dogs like him. In both cases, the people have taken their preferred message from the highly unreliable telephone game and attempt to make it a self-fulfilling prophecy. In their own ways, those in each group attempt to force the dog to support their own views. At this point, you might be asking yourself, why would any thinking person bait an animal like that? The short answer is because it works for them. If Sparkle gets all wiggly and jumps on the barrier when the pro-sparkles burble and coo at him, they believe he communicates his great love for them, which validates their view. When Sparkles barks and runs away when the anti-sparkles menace him, they believe he validates their view of him too. But what about Sparkle? The reaction from those in both groups confuse him. Despite those in one group believing they're communicating their great love for the dog, and the other being equally convinced they're showing the dog they're the boss, neither message communicates the one of human stability and confidence conveyed by his people. Ironically, the combined irrational behavior of the people in telephone game groups possesses the potential to stress the dog and create physical or behavioral problems for him. This even may result in another round of the telephone game and the relating self-fulfilling human prophecies that further support the polarized view of Sparkle that emerged from the game. This repeat sequence might seem strange, but in a society increasingly separated from nature, unfortunately, it's not. The worst part of the sequence is that it reduces any animal involved to a mere symbol of the emotions swirling in the minds of those willing to play the game. Even when we play the game without any supporters backing our views, it's easy to see how readily the original description of any animal behavior may get distorted as people describe it to others. However, when descriptions of what some perceive as problem behavior based on hearsay cause people to form pro- or anti-animal groups, this makes it increasingly difficult to determine what originally happened. And just because these folks are more numerous, louder, or more passionate about their view of the problem doesn't make it true. Without a concrete, objective, and reliable history to support them, such strong opinions and emotions contribute little to the proper diagnosis and resolution of problem animal behavior. Similarly, those who take this egocentric approach to animal problems are destined to repeat this process unless they make a conscious effort not to do so. Put another way, if those involved in problem animal related telephone games don't learn from their own and others' mistakes by seeking out the truth, they're doomed to repeat these detrimental sequences too.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.